Hello, art appreciators, arbiters of good taste, keen-eyed readers, and bookstore browsers. Welcome to another episode of Right Minded, where we're indulging my desire to interject an episode every now and again about the book industry. But I only do this because it matters and also because it's grant approved. And so, yes, I am joined today by my stylish co-host, Grant Faulkner, who I know has good taste for visuals because it's evident from his online presence. But Grant, talk to us a bit about whether you have a good eye for aesthetics or whether you just take good advice from the experts you've been privileged enough to work alongside.
Hopefully both. You know, in terms of book designers, I think choosing a good designer, which can be really challenging because there's so many different types of designers out there with different kinds of specialties. Anyway, that's the most important decision, right? Is finding a good person to work with. It's the one decision, like hiring an employee, that really determines the outcome of the book cover. But beyond that, I love the collaborative aspect of working with a designer. And this doesn't always happen with a traditional publishing house, and probably actually seldom happens because you're often assigned a designer and you never get to meet or talk to that designer, and they design, you know, a series of covers for you to for you and your editor, or usually just your editor chooses and then presents them to the author. But I actually, my favorite experience with a designer comes from a designer that you recommended, Brooke, when I first self-published a story. Her name's Patty Capaldi, and I've worked with her on a few books now. And what I like about her is the way she gently guides me through the process. You know, she works to make my vision happen. She's really a great listener. But she's also great about how she pushes back, you know, and asserts her expertise in really nice ways, because in the end, I'm not a designer. She's the expert. And so I think creative collaboration is really mysterious. But when you find a really good relationship like that, you know, just cherish it and keep that person.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're talking today with Julie Metz, who is my creative director at this moment. And I cherish her for so many reasons, because I know that my own taste for visual images and especially cover design has grown over time. Knowing what works for a cover design is intuitive to a degree, but it's much more. And you really have to know the industry trends and understand the particular genre that a book is going into, and then how that impacts design. And cover design is complicated because there really is a certain je ne sais quoi quality about covers in general. And for me, because I'm not a designer by trade, it's not always easy to articulate why I don't like something or do like something, although I've gotten a lot better at that. And as the publisher, because I'm liaisoning between Julie and our other designers and the author, it is my job oftentimes to do that gentle pushback that you're talking about. And sometimes it's not so gentle. Every once in a while, it has to be a harder pushback, because I do sometimes talk about the fact that authors kind of need some saving from their own worst instincts. And that doesn't happen too often, but it does happen. And in the 2 decades that I've been working in book publishing, I've really never worked with such a sharp-eyed or savvy designer as Julie is, you know, someone who has the skills and the intuition, the creative breadth, and frankly, the no bullshit attitude that she brings to the table. And she's one of those people who was perhaps born into what she does. I mean, she's going to talk about that in the interview. Her father was an esteemed designer for Simon & Schuster. And so I feel like I'm giving a little gift to our listeners today and bringing her on, because the insights that she has into cover design are educational and illuminating and truly pertinent to any writer who intends to publish someday. Grant, can you tell us a story about one of your book covers that taught you something or made you appreciate what goes into a jacket design?
Yeah, I think your comment about being attuned to who the readers are is really important. You know, the first cover that was recommended for my book, Pep Talks for Writers, the one that the editor and the design team liked, and it was delivered to me with a great deal of kind of fanfare, like, this is it. This is the one for you. But it was actually absolutely wrong, because it was communicating to the wrong audience. It was a cover that was based, you know, the background was lined yellow paper. I think there were red marks on it. It looked like it was a book geared to teachers. And unfortunately, my agent pushed back on it. I didn't really know that you could push back on it, to tell you the truth. But they developed an entirely new cover or a different covers to look at. Actually, I think they had these covers developed, but they just didn't present them with us. They just presented this one. And there was something to work with there in terms of a cover design that spoke more to the tone of the content, you know, empowering and lively. So yeah, my lesson is that writers should always know that you can push back. And if you have an agent, it helps for them to help with this. My criteria for cover is pretty simple, at least personally. I always ask myself if I'll be proud to carry the book to the podium if I'm at a reading, or if I'm proud to post it on the cover on social media. You know, it's a really good test, and you're going to have to be really proud of your book in order to go sell it. So Patty, who I mentioned earlier, she takes the time to read my stories before developing the cover, or at least reading some of them. And she doesn't really have to do that, but I'm really impressed by how thoughtful she is to put that extra touch to kind of match the motif of the cover to the themes of the stories. How about you, Brooke? Do you have any good stories?
Yeah, I mean, for the past three book covers, so Write On Sisters, which just came out in the fall, Magic of Memoir, and Greenlight Your Book, I've been really grateful to rely on Julie's inspiration and artistic vision for what those books could be. So I think that the main story I want to share is that I haven't fallen in love with my covers at first sight. In every single case, in fact, I saw them and it took some days to sink in. I definitely like what you just said about whether I would be proud to put it on social media or carry it. It wasn't about feeling embarrassed, but it was like, oh, I don't know that is my book, right? And so my experience with some writers is that they think they're supposed to fall in love with their covers, or that the covers have to tell a very literal story or the whole story. And this just isn't the case, because book covers mostly need to evoke a feeling, and literal covers are not always best. Industry trends actually show that covers that are conceptual in nature are more popular. So I'm actually thinking of books like A Million Little Pieces, you know, by James Frey, which is a picture of a hand with candy on it. Interesting things that capture an emotion. They could capture a theme, or just an energy might speak to a metaphor. And I was taken recently with the cover of Know My Name, the recent courageous and incredibly beautifully written book by Chanel Miller. And she's the woman who outed herself in the case of Brock Turner, the Stanford swimmer who got sentenced to 6 months in county jail after sexually assaulting her. The back flap of that jacket actually tells a really interesting story. So the cover is just simple gold lines across a blue-green backdrop. And then on the back flap of the book, it actually reads, and I want to share this because I sort of loved this by way of telling the reader what this was about. The gold veins on the cover represent the Japanese art of kintsugi, golden repair, in which pieces of broken pottery are mended with powdered gold and lacquer, rather than treating the breaks as blemishes to conceal. And then it goes on to explain, the technique shows us that although an object cannot be returned to its original state, fragments can be made whole again. And I really love that this cover has this story or this metaphor that was intentional. And I liked it even before I read the explanation. I just liked the simplicity of the cover. And sometimes the story itself is so big, as is the case in for Chanel, or too powerful or too graphic or too traumatic to try to show everything that you might think you need to show. And so then one solution is to pull back or to go more minimalist. And this is a case where you can really feel the impact of that minimalism.
You know, one thing that really made my work with Patty successful, Brooke, is a questionnaire. I guess it's a questionnaire you gave me way back when I first contacted Patty. And it's cool because it's very simple. It asks questions like, what are 10 adjectives that describe your book? What are 5 adjectives that don't describe your book? Who do you want to buy this book? What do you want them to get out of it? And then there was space for me to show my favorite covers and explain why their designs might be good models to base a design on. So one thing, it really helped me think about the way to describe the design that I thought would work, and also provide examples and do research of my own. But it was also great just because it helped me as a writer and Patty as a designer start with the same language and have the same reference points. So I remember Patty looking at some of the covers I gave her as models, and she'd pick up certain elements that she thought would work for the book, but then she'd also say what she thought wouldn't work. So I think having that shared dialogue is really crucial for the success of any design project. And I send the Word doc that you sent me out to other writers. I just think it's really wonderful. But I know there are a bunch of challenges. People have a a lot of challenges with working with a designer or the design. So what challenges have you encountered with cover design, Brooke?
Yeah, there are a lot that come up. And of course, my perspective is really different as a publisher because I'm working with so many authors and working with Julie around how to position the books. And we want them to be very saleable and on trend. And of course, authors aren't always going to agree with us. And to what you said earlier, sometimes people push back and sometimes that pushback is appropriate and sometimes they're wrong. The document that you're talking about is our cover memo. So we ask our authors to fill out those cover memos. And sometimes they'll fill out the cover memos and tell us exactly what they think they want. And then if we execute that, it's not what they want, you know? So it's complicated. Cover design can be really, really difficult. And then we can have a concept that seems like it's going to work and then it might not be executable. And that's a thing. So it can be hard because designers can go down a bit of a rabbit hole with a design based on something that an author tries to tell them. And then it can be difficult to pull back out and regroup and re-execute, which is why things like kill fees exist and why if something really isn't working, the best remedy is just to give the cover to a new designer. But more often than not, I find like the biggest challenge is that authors sometimes want things that don't make good covers. So the biggest offender category wise is fine art. Lots of authors will see something that they really love visually because they imagine that it will look good on the wall of their home, but it doesn't make a good cover. And it's because the images are too busy or too loud. There's too much going on. And really, type is king on a cover. The type matters. You have to be able to read the type, of course. And then there are lots of memoirists that I work with who might have their heart set on a particular right image, but it's not necessarily going to work for the book for any number of reasons. And then finally, just because we're talking about things that are kind of the worst practices that I see from authors, there are those who fall into the trap of desiring their sibling or their child to do the artwork on their book because that person is an illustrator or they're dabbling in design. And this is also really tough because it is a professional endeavor and it's not a good time necessarily to be involving these loved ones just because you want to give them a chance or because it will be personally meaningful to you as some sort of heirloom or souvenir. And so the truth is that there are just about 100 ways that authors get in the way of the design process. And I believe in the power of collaboration. You know, what you said, and one of the things that makes She Writes special is that we do collaborate and we do take time and we explain where we're coming from. And sometimes Julie and I have to kind of do a good cop, bad cop dynamic in order to end with something that feels like we can be proud of and that the author really is proud of too.
Brooke, I think it's so funny that you and Julie play good cop and bad cop with a cover because that's what I feel happens on the author end as well. The agent takes the role of the bad cop and the author takes the role of the good cop, essentially. So you have a dueling game of good cop, bad cop to decide on the final cover. But I think that can work. You know, and it's pretty fascinating, this whole world of cover design, because it's obviously so critical to our experience of books. And I've purchased books simply because their cover drew me. I had to pick it up and find out what it was about. You know, and this happens when I don't know anything about the book, the topic, or the author. And it's actually led me to some great reading. I love some of my books because of the cover. It adds to the reading experience.
Yeah, it's interesting. And here, this idea that don't judge a book by its cover. I think that's pretty much a thing of the past. People very much do judge books by their covers. And partly that's because of this history. And we'll get to hear from Julie a bit about the history of cover design, which in and of itself is just a layered thing. Because next to the editing, it's the most expensive part of creating a book. We spend $1,000 to $2,000 usually on our cover designs. Whereas I know some publishers in New York will spend $5,000 to $6,000. And it's just crazy if you think about you're trying to earn that money back and what the expenses are that go into creating this stuff. And yet it's art and it matters and it's going to live with you forever. So much to dive in here with Julie Metz, and she will be back with us right after this break. So hang tight.
Mm-hmm. Brooke, I think we agree that one of the great benefits of writing is the way it expands our world. It's a constant learning opportunity, and that can mean everything from how to write suspenseful plots or riveting characters to doing research for an historical novel or studying psychology to get some insights into the human character. And that's why I'm especially happy that Great Courses is sponsoring Right Minded. You literally have thousands of different courses at your fingertips. So, for instance, if I'm going to write a horror novel, I can check out the course Monsters Within. And if I need to write better sentences for that novel, I can check out Building Great Sentences. And I've actually been listening to one of their new courses, Great American Short Stories. And what I like about it is the way it covers short stories written in different eras, different genres, and different lengths. And there's even a course on my beloved genre, microfiction. And Brooke, I know you've been listening to some courses on the Great Courses Plus app on your phone. So what have you enjoyed?
Yeah, I have been listening to a lot of stuff. I've been dabbling, I should say. I've been talking about James Scott Bell because that was the one I watched all the way through, and there was a lot of lectures, but I particularly recommend it, especially given our audience. I liked how he delved into the three acts in his classes: Act One, The Disturbance; Act Two, The Arena of Conflict; and Act Three, Resolution. It's such good content, and there's so much more. So you think you might be dabbling a little bit more than I am lately, though.
Yeah, Great Courses is amazing because it's learning on your own terms. That's what I love about it. I don't have a courses that I have to be there for, like on Wednesday, every Wednesday at 10 o'clock. I can fit them into my life, and there's no homework. That's good. But you get the best teachers and experts. So I sometimes think, you know, when I'm going through, scrolling through the course catalog, that it's just like going back to college, and I can now get that degree in psychology that I didn't have time for in college.
And you guys, we've been doing these spots for a few months now, and while we know it's a little tiring to listen to ads on podcasts, the great part about it is that we are getting sponsored, and that keeps us being able to do what we do. So we're asking you to try this out. It's totally worth your time. Go over there and get your free month, see what you see, and you might just want to sign up because it is fantastic. Use our URL, which is thegreatcoursesplus.com/rightminded.
I'm going to repeat that one more time for our listeners, Brooke. thegreatcoursesplus.com/rightminded. No hyphen in right-minded, just right-minded. So sign up, learn, and help us out.
It's really good stuff. Hi, everybody. We are back with today's guest, Julie Metz. And Julie is a graphic designer and the current creative director of She Writes Press and Spark Press, which are the two imprints where I am publisher. So I'm very excited for her to share her knowledge with us today. She's also a New York Times bestselling author of the memoir Perfection, which was a Barnes & Noble Discover Great New Writers selection. She is currently finishing her next book, forthcoming on Atria, Simon & Schuster, which is called Eva and Eve, a story about her mother's lost childhood in Vienna, from which her well-to-do Jewish family narrowly escaped in the years following the Nazi takeover of Austria. Julie has written on a wide range of women's issues for publications including the New York Times, the Huffington Post, Dame, Salon, and countless others. And she's a fellow at the Yaddo Corporation, the McDowell Colony, the Virginia Center for the Creative Rights, and she lives with her family in the Hudson River Valley. Julie, my gosh, what an impressive resume. And welcome, and thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here today.
So I want to start by telling you and sharing with our listeners that I have learned a lot from you about cover design, which shouldn't come as a surprise to you, but it's been a bit of a rigorous education because you're forthright and sure and unwavering when it comes to your tastes and instincts. So can you tell us about where this surety comes from and a bit about how you got into cover design in the first place?
Yes. So as it happens, it's sort of something of a family business. Both my parents worked at Simon & Schuster Publishers for something over four decades. And my father was the art director of the trade book jacket division, and my mother art directed the interiors. So pretty much for many decades, all dinner time conversation was about books. And also, I spent a lot of time in their offices kind of looking around. You know, I think I absorbed it from a very young age and always just loved books. We had tons of them around. My father was also a very opinionated art director, rather famously so. So I think I learned from him sort of how to mold my tastes and also how to really understand what works for book covers, even as trends change, you know, there's certain constants.
That's interesting, Julie. You know, I'm always interested in artists like you who not only wear multiple hats, but who truly excel at multiple things. And you're a talented designer handling a pretty sizable list of books, and you also find time to write. And your first book was a New York Times bestseller. Did one of your passions or talents come first, and how have you balanced the designer and the writer within you?
I started out as a graphic designer. I've been doing that for about over 25 years. That was what I thought my life was going to be about until my life took a strange turn. And this, you know, it started with a disastrous day when my husband died suddenly right in front of me. And it was in the aftermath of that, that a writer I knew in the town where I was living sort of ordered me out to lunch and told me that I had to write a book. And I had never written before except letters, and I kept a journal at the time. But she sent me home and told me to write for 20 minutes a day. And the next thing you know, I had a book. So, well, it wasn't quite that fast. It did take some time. So I always think of my life as a writer as a little bit accidental. But now, of course, it is my life, and I try to do both. And it can be a struggle sometimes, really balancing the time. I'm not sure that I've developed a great system for it, but I try. I'm a very disciplined person, so I think that helps. I just try to carve out time each day to do all the things.
Yeah, all the things. The next question was going to be about all these books that we work on together. And I want to, you know, have our listeners get a taste of one of the things that I appreciate about you, which is your deep understanding of the industry and cover trends. So could you talk a bit about the cover process, the creative process that goes into making comps, and maybe just explain what comps are for those who aren't familiar with the term?
So in the old days, you know, my dad would always tell me the way you could tell a really good cover is you stand on Fifth Avenue and look across the street to the old Scribner's bookstore, which isn't the Scribner's bookstore anymore. And if you could see the covers, really, like if that made an impact on you from across Fifth Avenue, you were doing well. Now it's a 1-inch high icon on Amazon. And this is really what I try to impress on our authors who are coming to this often for the first time, that it's 1-inch high, and people might look at it, you know, for a second or two, and that's it. And if you haven't gotten their attention in that amount of time, they're done, they're gone, and off to the next thing.
Right. And we offer our authors 5 comps usually. So just to go back to that thing, because I think that most people who will get a cover design down the road, whether that's through their publisher or even from a self-publishing perspective, if people are doing that, why offer multiple comps? And again, if you would just tell people what a comp is, which I guess stands for comparative, right?
Oh, yes. So a comp is sort of the, you know, we have ideas, and the way they sort of come together, you do want to show variations to an author. It's we never just show one thing, and that's because there's, like anything else, you know, there's a lot of ways to accomplish anything that's visual, whether you're designing a book cover or designing a house or designing a dress. So you always want to try out a bunch of options, because you never know what's going to work. And sometimes it's actually the happy accidents that really are the best thing. And then there's no accounting for tastes. You know, most of these authors, I'm never going to meet them in person. So I'm trying out things that please me, but you know, everyone's got their own tastes and they're going to gravitate to something. And sometimes that is an unexpected choice. And I also think that for first-time authors, you know, the process is very new to them. And so by giving, some variety of examples, it gives them a chance to really think about their book and what might work best for it.
Well, Julie, Brooke tells me that you're tough, that you have the highest of standards. And I laughed when I saw on your bio page on your website an image of a fortune from a fortune cookie that reads, "You have a yearning for perfection." How is yearning for perfection helpful and challenging in your work as a designer?
Well, that little fortune was one that I actually found, and it was while I found it during the time I was working on my book, which happens to be called Perfection, my first book. And in that case, the title is somewhat ironic, but I would say I come from a long line of detail-oriented perfectionists. And so, I don't know, it's genetic. Sometimes it can be a curse. You know, I think being sort of, you don't want to get mired in the details too much sometimes, because that can hold back the imagination. But I do feel that one of the things that, you know, Brooke and I are really trying to do is to elevate the brand of She Writes and really make it a standout. And the only way to get there is to really have very high standards, whether I'm designing the covers or whether I'm working with our team of freelancers.
Well, and I will say that the standout covers are the things that propel our program and do make it legitimate within the industry. And so there is so much value on covers. Maybe it has always been the case, but I am curious about that, about the evolution of American book design and specifically how American publishers sell to audiences, because I was looking at French covers recently because I did an interview with the French writer who wrote The Perfect Nanny. And when I saw her French cover versus her American cover, it was pretty stunning. The French cover was just plain, no image, with type, very simple type. And we put so much into our cover designs, and we'll spend thousands of dollars sometimes on the right image or the right illustration. So could you just talk about that idea of American book design as maybe an advertising tool, and if you have some context about that and how you think of it when you're designing your own covers?
So it's really interesting what's happened. I've definitely noticed when I've gone to France, you know, a lot of some of the imprints are just cream with some red and black type on it. It's really incredible. I was talking to my dad about this recently because really this big shift kind of happened on his watch during, I guess it may have started mid-century, that really the, you know, in the beginning they were called dust jackets, and that was the function of a book jacket, was to keep dust off the book. So it wasn't really being used in its full potential as an advertising element, but that started to change really very aggressively in the mid-century. And certainly, you know, by the time in the 60s and 70s, you started to really see book jackets emerge, and also paper covers. That was a huge innovation, was pocketbooks, you know, paperback books. Really emerging. And suddenly the cover then becomes this fantastic selling tool. So for me, I mean, you know, I guess in Europe, books are maybe bought a different way. I'm not really sure, or it's just a tradition that nobody wants to change. But here in the United States, I think it's been now a while that we really see the cover as really one of the most important selling tools we have.
Well, Julie, to loop back a little bit into writing, this new book you're working on sounds stunning. Can you share a little bit about the story and let our listeners know when it will be coming out?
Yes. So I've been working on this book for a while. It's called Ava and Eve, and it's the story, as Brooke described, of my mother's Austrian Jewish family and how they came to the United States as immigrants in 1940. And by this point, you know, the situation in Vienna was very, very dangerous. If you didn't get out in 1938, it was really a hair-raising journey to escape. And my mother had never really shared very much about it. So I was kind of putting it together with, you know, just there were a lot of holes in that story. And after she died, I had all the documents that she had saved, and I decided to go on a backward journey and see if I could find out more about the story. So sort of similar to my first book. It's a bit of a detective story, but of documents and research and really hunting down lots of details. And then there were also some incredibly fortunate coincidences that happened where I met people along the way who really helped me. But I think when I think about what drove me to write it, it was really trying to understand my mother. We'd had a difficult relationship at times, and I felt like I really wanted to understand the trauma of the immigration experience during the war. And then, of course, I worked on it for a long enough time that suddenly it became incredibly relevant to the political situation that we see now. Jews were, very distrusted immigrants. We were living at that time. There was still the Johnson-Reed Act of 1924 that had basically shut out all Jewish immigrants from Eastern Europe. And so I think it was a climate very similar to now. It was a profoundly xenophobic, very anti-immigrant, and very isolationist. I hope the book will tell an individual story, but also speak to the story of an immigration experience.
Well, and Julie, I'm really looking forward to your book, and I hope that all of our listeners will read it too. And as a final question, will you be designing the cover of your own book?
So I have been asked to design it. And so I just turned in my draft 2 days ago, and I thought I would take count to 10 and take some deep breaths. And then I think very soon I'm going to start working on the cover. So that will be another adventure, because it feels very close to me. And sometimes that's a difficult thing, to sort of have to imagine the project for other people.
As we know, right? So yeah. Yes, well, good luck,
exactly.
Julie. Thank you so much for being with us today. We so appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Julie.
And thank you for having me. Pleasure.
We will be right back to hear Brooke's takeaway today.
So as Grant and I were talking about in the opening part of today's episode, we ask all of our authors at She Writes Press and Spark Press to fill out a cover design memo. But you don't have to wait till you're a published author to start thinking about your cover, to start educating yourself about cover design. Start paying attention to covers in your genre. If you're lucky enough to live near a bookstore, pop in and spend some time observing the covers on the shelves there, and you'll see where your book is going to eventually live and what other books in your genre look like. Then you can see if you notice any trends, maybe consider what you like and don't like and why. And then you could also keep a running list of titles whose covers you love, so that when you do have the opportunity to either fill out a cover memo or to work with a designer, you have those things ready to go. The art of being an author, becoming an author, is to remember that your book is beyond you. It's bigger than you. As Julie was talking about at the end there, when she's considering the prospect of designing her own cover, she has to think about the reader. So the takeaway is that when it comes to book publishing, don't keep your book too small. Don't limit its chances by imposing onto it what you think it needs to be. If it so happens that what you need it to be aligns with what your publisher and or your designer think too, wonderful. Lucky you. But stay open to the process.
Thanks so much, Brooke. And thanks so much for listening to another episode of Right Minded, everybody. And thanks so much for going on to Apple Podcasts and leaving reviews for us. I want to read this one by Karma Pug, a 5-star review. Thank you. The title of this review is "Part of My Self-Care as a Writer." So fun. I love this idea of self-care as a writer. She says, "It's a great, interesting, educational podcast. So fun. You barely know you are learning so much. For men and women seeking encouragement and information on writing, editing, publishing, and so much more. Too congenial. You're congenial, Brooke. Knowledgeable and experienced hosts. And they get the greatest guests who know what they are talking about and are cutting edge current. Keep that November NaNoWriMo inspiration and that She Writes Press energy going all year long with tasty doses of this podcast." Right on. I love that. Tasty doses. So come back for another tasty dose of Right Minded next week. You can download it on Apple Podcasts, just about anywhere on the internet where you can download podcasts. So we will see you soon. We'll be right back.